Welcome to Crash Concepts, where the economy, energy, and the environment are explored. Up next, fresh ideas and insights into the factors that are driving the world and shaping your future. Presenting information you can't afford to live without, here's Chris Martinson.
This is another Peak Prosperity Podcast. I am your host, Chris Martinson. And, you know, the world financial system, as I've often described, is really it's a confidence game. We have faith-based money, and the Fed is rapidly eroding our faith in the money, just like the Japanese are, in an attempt to get inflation. They're playing a very risky game with what I think is the most important social contract we have, which is our money system, and it's being actively debased. And so here to help us talk about really the importance of confidence and faith in the money system and other parts of the system that we collectively call the world we live in is Bob Moriarty, proprietor of 321 Gold, a very accomplished individual, once one of the youngest or the youngest fighter pilot in the world. Too many things to go into in terms of what he's accomplished so far. But mostly I'd describe him as somebody who's alert, aware, paying attention, and just about as concerned as I am, if not more so. Bob, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure being here today, Chris.
So something's come up. You handed me a newspaper article, and it's an analysis. It's talking about something that's possibly going to impact this thing around faith or credibility in the system. What is it, and why is it important?
Well, here's what's interesting. There's a number of people. I've been preaching for a dozen years now that we were going down the wrong path politically, we're going down the wrong path economically, and it was going to lead to bad things in the future. There's a number of gold shows. There's Casey's show, and it's one of the better shows out there. Got some great speakers, and you can go in and listen to 10 guys talk about bad things are happening, and you need to be prepared, and the world is going to change in the future. Well, what's very interesting to me is that we've been fringe, we've been preaching to a very small number of people who are being made aware. There's 500 or 600 people here at this conference. These guys have paid a lot of money, but actually they already know that there are substantial issues. What we need to do is we need to let the public in. That's why I started 321 Gold 12 years ago, is to give people a fair shake and give them a chance of saving some of what they've worked for. The whole purpose of my website is to educate investors, and I spend two-thirds of my time traveling all over the world visiting projects. I went out to breakfast this morning with a friend of mine, and I picked up a newspaper because I need something to read, and I read it. It's the Arizona Daily Star, Sunday, October 6th, and the article is titled U.S. Reliability Question Overseas. And they talk about this fiasco that's going on in Washington right now. Now, here's the key. If you come to the conference and you spend $1,500, you can listen to very bright guys tell you that the United States reputation is going downhill in a hell of a hurry. But the real key is now you can pick up a newspaper, and for a buck, you can read a German saying what is clear, though, that in America is already politically bankrupt. Well, being politically bankrupt and being fiscally bankrupt is exactly the same thing. So Chris was marginal. Chris was fringe. Chris was coming out with a new message when he wrote his book. But even newspapers are figuring out what's going on now. And this is a sea change.
Well, this is an amazing development. And so this article is really talking about the loss of confidence people have, and it seems to be accelerating, I think, is the observation, maybe exponentially accelerating. Of course, trust is something you can lose in a heartbeat, and it takes forever to get it back. And this is important because the United States, people say, well, we've got this huge trade imbalance, and the United States doesn't export nearly as much as it should, and that's false. The United States exports a lot. We export dollars, and what we need is people to willingly accept those all across the world. And so when our political viability and our political, and I think even our moral standing is being questioned in this article, that people say, are saying effectively that they don't trust the leadership, they don't trust the United States has a direction that they understand. It seems very self-serving. And so that's a pillar of confidence. It's being rattled as we speak. And we rely in the United States on the rest of the world to not only willingly accept our dollars, but to hold them. There's about $7 trillion U.S. dollars held in reserve all across the planet in various places. China's got a bunch, Japan has them, but they're everywhere. And if those $7 trillion suddenly decided they didn't want to be held outside and they had to go somewhere, the United States prospects would change really rather dramatically. And so at this conference, we're hearing a lot of people say the United States is, and we know this mathematically, is insolvent. Our assets and our liabilities no longer match. We know we do not currently have a cash flow problem, so we're not technically in bankruptcy as a legal term. But this article points to the idea that if the world changes its perceptions and doesn't want to hold U.S. dollars, maybe for political reasons or financial reasons or potentially economic reasons, that the difference between insolvency and bankruptcy, that gap will close. They'll be the same thing at some point. Bob, your thoughts?
You raised an issue that's very interesting, and that's the moral connection, the dollar of the belief in the dollar and the belief in money. I use an analogy that I never heard anybody else use, but it makes a lot of sense to me. We know exactly what the weight of a gram is, and a gram weighs the same thing in the United States, it weighs in France, it weighs in Tanzania. We know exactly what the quantity of a liter is. A liter is a liter is a liter no matter where you go. We understand temperature, and temperature is fixed. Now, there are some things that in life that have to be fixed. If you're going to be a tailor and you're going to make a suit for someone, the length of a meter cannot change from day to day. Because if you made half the suit and then you went home and you had dinner and you went to bed and you got up the next day and they changed the length of a meter and you were making the left side of the suit as opposed to the right side, the length of the sleeve would be different. It might be longer, it might be shorter, but because the value of the meter has changed, it would be impossible for you to make a suit that actually works. Now, here's something I've never heard anybody say, but everybody needs to think about. Between noon Monday and noon Tuesday, the value of the U.S. dollar on the commodities exchanges will probably change 10,000 times. Now, if a Martian flew to Earth and landed and he was talking to you and he said, okay, how do you measure length? And you said, well, we do it in meters, okay, and it's this long. And he says, oh, that's cool. How often does that change? Well, it never changes. The length of a meter is fixed. And that way, everybody that makes a suit makes suits with sleeves that are the same length. And he says, okay, well, how do you actually measure the weight of something? And he said, well, we use grams, and grams are the same from day to day. And people say, that's cool. And the Martian says, okay, I can see that. That works. Well, how do you measure something like water or gasoline or liquids? And, well, we use liters. And the Martian says, okay, I like that. That makes a lot of sense. And he says, okay, what do you use for currency? How do you exchange goods so you trade things? And you say, well, we use dollars. And he said, oh, okay, dollars, that's cool. How often does the value of the dollar change? And you say, well, between noon today and noon tomorrow, it'll change about 10,000 times. The Martian would look at you, and he would be convinced you had lost your mind. Because how can the value of a currency change 10,000 times in a day? Now, that didn't occur prior to 1970. Currencies were relatively fixed. They changed periodically based on economic events, but currencies were relatively fixed. When we got off the gold standard in August of 1971, all of a sudden we had to have a currency system that changed on a constant basis. Now, what I'm telling you is that is absolutely insane. And when you go insane, you have to regain your sanity and you have to come up with something that makes sense. The value of money should be fixed. And I argue that many of the political problems that we have, the political bankruptcy that we have, the physical bankruptcy that we have, the failure of our education system, the failure of our health system, the failure of our legal system is all tied to having a currency that is not fixed. We don't know what value is anymore. So we have lost our financial compass, And that affects a lot of other things. We need to have that stored. And to read in an average newspaper, where German newspapers writing about America being politically bankrupt, it's something that I've said for years. People here at the conference have said for years, but people are waking up to it. We are financially bankrupt. We're politically bankrupt. You can be a Democrat and you can believe that Republicans are the worst people in the world, or you can be a Republican and believe that Democrats are the worst people in the world. But what we have is total corruption in government. If you're the biggest supporter of Obamacare, there is a 99% chance that you can't even sign up. Our government is in a state of failure, and we need to restart. We need a reset.
You know, you raise a lot of really interesting points there, Bob, and in particular, it's the idea of currency uncertainty. You know, I've been reading a lot about U.S. corporations have stored up a pretty good amount of cash. They don't know what to do with it. They're buying shares back. What they're not doing is really investing in the future, and part of the reason is they're very uncertain about certain regulatory pieces of the landscape, Obamacare being one, but there are a variety of tax code changes coming. So a lot of corporations are kind of up in the air, and when humans are uncertain, we tend to not be at our best, right? We're not certainly moving forward, and one of the things we're not doing is making really long-term plans, the kinds of long-term plans that allow you to really structurally reform an education system that badly needs it, or to invest in infrastructure projects that might take a lifetime to see the realization for. We have these compressed time horizons because of that, and our currency system's at the heart of that for me, right? Because it introduces a massive amount of uncertainty. You and I have share an uncertainty that will it even exist in 10 years, right? So that compresses it changes our decisions, our time horizons. And one of the most spectacular places I went to, because I just couldn't believe it got built at all, the cathedral at Chartres, right? It's the size of a football field. It was started in, I think, the year 900 or something, right? This is in the midst of one of the largest depressionary eras ever, because the population was actually declining. And somebody sat down and unfolded a piece of lambskin, I'm going to assume, and said, okay, hang with me for a second. I have this idea. If I'm lucky, in my lifetime, we'll get the cornerstones of this thing laid, right? It's going to take 70, 80, 90, 100 years to build. It took maybe even longer than that. And it's spectacular. The point I want to make here is that in that period of time, they had a money system that supported long-term thinking. When you have high interest rates, or interest rates that are varying, or currencies are varying, our time horizons compress. You know, you're more likely to build a house out of pressboard and cardboard than out of durable stone. To see some of the great works that have really been accomplished is to understand the role of having a structurally intact political system, cultural system, and money system that come together so that people can really envision very, very large grand things. That's my sort of sweeping observation about where we are. When you say politically bankrupt, that's shorthand. My slightly longer hand for it is that we're seriously adrift. We're just flailing about. We're trying anything to preserve a status quo that I think arguably what the Casey Research Summit and my work and your work illustrates is we're on a path that doesn't really have a future. And that's a hard path to really throw your weight behind get excited by.
That's not really true. We're on a train that is going down a mountain at a 45-degree slope. We have a future, and we know exactly what the future is going to be. Now, when I predicted fiscal collapse 10 years ago or 15 years ago, everybody thought I was nuts. When you can pick up a newspaper and read it today, it is now mainstream. This is going to be the most publicized financial collapse in world history, but the governments of every country in the world are well aware that what they've got is totally non-sustainable and it's going to blow up. Now, I'll give you an example. If you take the word austerity, and they use the word austerity a lot in Europe, they say, well, we don't want austerity. If you translate that into plain English, what they call austerity means living within your means. Now, I would tell my children, I would tell my niece's nephew, I would tell any young people, if you want to live a happy life, you have to live within your means. It is true that as an individual, you have to live within your means. As a community, you have to live within your means. As a corporation, you have to live within your means. But we've got the United States government saying, you don't need to live within your means. We can spend money that your great-grandchildren are going to pay, and you'll be better off. We could put people on food stamps where 51% of people are getting benefits from the United States government every month. We have totally inverted the system. The system is totally insane. It doesn't work. It's not good for anybody other than the banks and the political figures who are literally stealing from the rest of Americans. But the good news is the system is in a rapid state of collapse. We know we're going to hit the bottom here real soon. The financial system is going to collapse, and it'll give us the opportunity to restart and do something that makes sense. And that's why I like your book so much, and I like your website, and I like your ideas, because you're saying there is a better future if we plan for it. We don't need to be planning for what's going to happen tomorrow. We should know what's going to happen tomorrow. We need to be planning for a year from now, and 5 years from now, and 20 years from now.
Oh, absolutely. And one of my core tenets is that we don't need anything new to be developed. We already have all the information. We have all the things we need right now to start building towards that future. My concern is that that train you're talking about that's heading down that 45-degree incline, you're right, it does have a future, but it's not a happy one. And my concern is that the train wreck is going to be so severe that it's really going to... My main concern is it's going to catch a lot of people unawares, and it's the lack of awareness that is probably the greatest threat, because it's not going to be the actual economic collapse that's going to hurt people, right? We could cut our living standards quite a bit and still be very, very well off compared to, you know, ancient periods of history. It'll be people's reactions to it. It'll be people's responses. So I'm wondering, in your own life, does your view of the future inform where you choose to live or who you want to be around or how you would select a future for yourself based on how people might react?
Of course, and the points that you make are very valid, but what I want to point out to you is I am alternative media. I am fringe. I am a guy who thinks for himself, and it came to conclusions many years ago. You are alternative media, but people now have the ability to go to the internet, and they have the ability to learn things that they didn't have as little as 15 years ago. Now, let me give you an analogy. If you go back to 1928 and 1929, there were a lot of very bright, very wealthy people who were aware the financial system was on the verge of a collapse. Bernard Baruch was well aware. Joseph Kennedy was well aware. A lot of financial guys were shorting the market because they knew bad things were going to happen. The average guy on the street had no advantage, had no information whatsoever. Now, I am not a guy who says everything that you read on the internet is true. There is a lot of nonsense on the internet. There's a lot of crap on the internet. It is not all true. However, buried among the crap are some kernels of some really good information. And there's a lot of guys like you and like me and like Casey and like these guys who are trying to educate people. I've been trying to do it for a dozen years now. I don't need to run the website. My wife would really love for me to shut the website down. But we're trying to educate investors. We're trying to say, these are the bad things that are going to happen, and here's the alternatives to that, and here's what you could do. I would like to point out that there's been a tremendous victory for the alternative media. I'm the only person who's identified it so far, but if 3 weeks or a month ago, we were within 24 hours of launching an attack on Syria. Mm-hmm. On the basis that they had somehow, the government had used chemical weapons on their own people. Now, I'm hard-pressed to understand how killing people solves the problem of killing people, but someone in the government had decided that's what we needed to do. The pressure from ordinary Americans calling up their congressmen and saying, don't you dare do that, we are sick and tired of war, was an absolute victory for the alternative media. And when the collapse comes, and it is coming, people are going to have the alternative of going to the alternative media, and they're going to hear what's really going on as opposed to the nonsense that the six guys that control 95% of the media are feeding us.
Well, you know, the mainstream media, not the alternative media, but the big ones, they are constantly reinforcing this idea that the federal government is very big, very powerful, Who actually has the power in any country? Is it really the government or the people?
Well, that's a really good question. Let me give you a little bit of my background for the people listening to this or reading this. I went into the Marine Corps a week after I turned 18. It was late 1964. It was a month after the Gulf of Tonkin Resolution. I was accepted into flight training. I became a pilot when I was 19. I was flying the F-4 when I was 20. I was in Vietnam for 2 years. I was flying the F-4. It was the hottest fighter in the world. The enemy was a guy on the ground with a ball of rice in one hand and AK-47 in the other. Don't forget who won, and it was them, because they controlled the moral high ground. They were not the terrorists. They were not the invaders, and they were fighting for their own country. We were fighting for freedom or to prevent communism or stuff that people can't even explain today. But it doesn't make any difference how much apparent power governments have. They don't really have the power. If you don't believe that, Obama looks like a blithering idiot now. Putin looks like a genius. Obamacare clearly doesn't work. You can't even sign up for it. The government's in a total state of chaos right now. There are 90-year-old World War II veterans in wheelchairs that are knocking barricades down so they can go see the memorial that is supposedly in their honor. Any rational person would look at this and say, you know, the guys that run in government, they pretty much screwed it up. And they really have. And people are waking up to that. And it's because of the alternative media.
Well, that's, to me, is a ray of hope, is this idea that that the power really does sit with the people, because it's constantly reinforced, certainly the NSA spying scandal, looking at the fact that I'm certain that all of my communications are an open book now. And that that's a really chilling sort of an environment to live under, right? You know, even in Germany, they were saying the Stasi was never that complete and awful in terms of their invasiveness. And so my level of personal trust in my own government, that when they tell me, oh, no, with that last revelation from the Snowden documents, oh, that's how far we went. Did we say we didn't listen to your phone calls? Well, we didn't. We collected it, but we didn't listen to it. Oh, we did listen to it, but not all the time. And, you know, it's just being peeled back.
We only listened to it if you were having phone sex with your wife, and that's exactly what they were doing with American servicemen who were in Iraq and Afghanistan, and some of this gets into really sick. And when you think about it and you realize that the NSA has this power, if you put in video cameras in your house to prevent, you know, you want to capture a burglar on the video camera if you happen to get burglarized, you need to think about that, because if you can access it on the internet, so can the NSA. And I'm not saying it's good, and I'm not even going to say it's bad. What I'm going to say is that when we're going to allow the government to come into our bedrooms, this is something that we should at least be talking about. Yes. And I'm not going to say Snowden's a good guy or Snowden's a bad guy. I'm going to say that he has done something tremendous for Americans. He's got them talking and thinking about something that's very important. I personally, I don't know how you feel about it, I personally don't want the government in my bedroom.
Well, I share that strongly. I don't even want the government in to have access to any of my records in unless they have a really compelling need to, because history is just showing me time and time again that's a form of power, and power without oversight inevitably gets abused. I mean, we already saw the NSA admitted that a few of their employees might have been snooping on their exes and doing other things, right? It's a very invasive power, and it has no oversight, and so it's gone the inevitable direction. But a lot of this, I've heard people talk about that level of intrusiveness is really just, it's a sign. It's a sign of something. It's a sign of a very nervous government. Because I got to be honest with you, my view is terrorism is not a problem.
Oh, absolutely.
It's not. It's not something I worry about.
Terrorism doesn't even exist. I mean, the chances of you drowning, falling off a bicycle, are literally higher than dying of terrorism. I mean, terrorism is absolutely a bugaboo that the government made up. So what we've had is bizarro world. We've had a government totally out of control. I don't think that the NSA spying on Americans is them trying to get power. It's what happens at end of empire. What's going on in the United States is absolutely identical to what happened in Rome. I think that Michael Hastings was probably assassinated, and you can go to decline and fall of the Roman Empire, and they did exactly the same thing when they had somebody who was a political enemy of theirs for any reason. They just assassinated them. But we're in a state of collapse. It's obvious now, and things are going to get better very soon. You have the ability to buy an insurance policy, and you know your house is burning down, and that's a good thing.
So talk to us. What's the insurance policy for the average person listening to this?
Well, we just don't have enough time. There is enough time today. Literally, they should pick up your book and read it because it raises so many interesting questions. The simplest thing is you have to have some financial safety. You need to have a bunker, and the bunker would be owning some gold and silver. And I'm not a believer in this. I'm absolutely rabid about it. I live outside the United States, and I don't travel anywhere without having several ounces of gold and silver with me because I know the banking system is very unstable, and one day it's going to collapse. The very best thing that you can do to protect your family and yourself is to have some real assets when the collapse comes.
Absolutely, and of course, there's a lot of other things to consider, and the book goes through some of those. We talk about those on the website all the time. We've been talking with Bob Moriarty, proprietor of 321 Gold. That's 321-Gold. It's a great website if you haven't been to it, but I'm sure most of you have. And we're going to be doing more work with Bob in the future because education is the key here, and we really have to reach more people. I'm very proud of the number of people that I have reached personally. I know that Bob is as well, and it's not enough. We need to reach more people. And so thank you so much for what you do and your time today.
Thank you. It's been a really great pleasure, and I'm just absolutely thrilled that you're doing what you do.